Tonight I'm pleased to have Mark Frost here. Mark is the author of Thought Reality,
the new Seth book.
Who here remembers Seth? So, you know, I can remember Seth was an important influence on me, you know, starting my spiritual journey many, many years ago. So when Mark contacted me, I immediately said, yes, let's hear from Seth. Let's hear what he has to say. So Mark is here to give a talk on magicians, shamans, witches, and healers. Thank you for coming to Many Rivers, Mark. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for coming, folks. Okay, well, Seth is here with me. He's promised to give me a few minutes to get this thing started. Then, gradually, through the presentation, he just kind of does a mind melt with me, and you'll suddenly see that I'm not here anymore. This is all voluntary, of course. Okay, normally some strong energies here tonight. I start off with a little presentation of what got me here in this position as Seth's agent, collaborator, publisher, and distributor of his books. Of course, we were just talking earlier that we're going to get more distribution. We're going to be going through Ingram, which is a big international distributor. And so it will no longer be necessary for me to mail out books to bookstores. Well, what happened was I was in a university, Dominican University in Santa Fe, and I was getting my master's degree in counseling psychology, and I was also learning about hypnotherapy. I was going to hypnosis school so that I would have a way to make money while I got my hours as an MFCC. And so I had a little practice. I called it deep humor hypnotherapy. And I helped people access a state of consciousness. I called it deep humor. It's that place you go when you are laughing hysterically at something. It's that state of consciousness that you inhabit when you are trying to figure out a Zen koan, like what is the sound of one hand clapping?
What is the hand of one cloud?
What is the cloud of one hand? What is the sound of one hand clapping? Is that it? And I was having some success, but I wanted to branch out. And so I talked to my mentor who taught me how to hypnotize people and suggested that I branch out into past lives therapy. And so I had a few clients and developed my own sort of style, and I was pretty successful with it. A woman out of the blue phoned me up and asked for a past lives regression, and her name was Cass, and so we met. See, Seth is starting to come through already. He's making himself known here. And so she came to my little office in San Rafael, and I regressed her, and in about 2 or 3 minutes of suggestions, she apparently began to relive a time in the Roman Colosseum being devoured by lions. And she described how she projected her body, her consciousness out of her body and observed her physical death and watched as the lions ate the flesh from her bones. And so I thought to myself, wow, this really confirmed for me that past lives was a genuine phenomenon. Up to that point, I had my doubts about it because I'm a sort of a cynical guy to begin with. You never know that by looking at me now, but back then I used to make fun of this stuff, New Age stuff. I had a column in a magazine. It was called Mondo 2000 Magazine. It became a major international best-selling magazine. And I made fun of New Age concepts. And I saw, I guess as a result of that, karmically maybe, that's what caused this reversal. So anyway, I thought to myself as I was watching this woman undergo this transformation that, well, we're probably going to write books together on past lives. She obviously knows about it, and we would make a good team. So she made an appointment to meet for another session the next week, and in the meantime, she phoned me up and said, I'm in my office. She phones me up and says, do you know somebody named Seth? And I said, yeah, I do know somebody about something about a guy named Seth. I've got all these books out here. He was my first teacher, I guess you'd say. I read all the Seth books. And I thought she was going to say, well, I really like that guy's work. instead, she said, well, he's contacting me in my meditations. She was doing meditations with Maitreya, the Benjamin Graham's master. And he said he wants to start writing books again. And so I was sort of astounded, but I said, well, next session we'll try to bring him through with hypnosis. The upshot of all this was that in a few days we met in my office, and in just a few minutes, after a few brief suggestions, like you're relaxed, you're visiting a time in your life when you were free of all care and worry. And I was trying to think of the superb suggestion, so that Seth would come through. Right in the middle of that, he said, Mark, I'm here. In other words, you know, shut up and let me come through. And I said, you're here. And he said, yes, I'm here. You asked for me, I'm here. And so I said, Seth? And he said, yes, this is Seth. And he said something like, can we get on with this? So meanwhile, Cass, my client, is laid out on the couch, and she's got her eyes closed. And I'm thinking, wow, this is a prank done by my colleagues at the university. I was about ready to graduate, and I thought, wow, this is very well done. And so I asked Cass some confirming questions. Are you the Seth that spoke through Jane Roberts? He said, indeed I am, in a very masculine voice. And if you know Cass, she does not have a masculine voice. She has a very feminine, light voice. And so I said, well, why are you coming through us now? And he, in a very conversationally way, said, well, Cass is a very open person. There are not too many open people like her in the entity. And I said, oh, she's a part of your consciousness. I was trying to use the same terms that he did in his books. And he said, yes, Mark, you are part of this entity also. You're part of the Seth entity. I brought Cass to you. It was me that directed her to the yellow pages. It was me that directed her finger down in the yellow pages and stopping on transformational humor, the deep humor hypnotherapy. And I brought her to you so that you can begin writing my books again. You're going to be the scribe. She's going to be the medium. This is all taking place within a few minutes. And so I was blown away, but still sort of unbelieving. I mean, thinking, this is an elaborate hoax, you know. I'm graduating in a few days. Pretty soon everybody's going to come running and say, It wasn't a hoax. We met for another session a few days down the road, and Seth said, well, should we begin the book? And I said, okay, what do you want to write? I want to write on 9/11 and why it happened, and why, if you ignore the lessons of that humanity will destroy itself. That's basically what he's talking about. So we began Cass began that second session to dictate through, with Seth coming through her, the literal material that would become 9/11, the unknown reality of the world. It's all verbatim, taken from those sessions. With Seth did edit some of it, but for the most part, it's 99 9/10% channeled information. And it does, some people say it has a rough feel to it. That's why. It's because we didn't edit it at all. Now, as we published that first book, Cass was just learning who Seth was. And Seth directed her to read some of his older material so that she would be familiar with his concepts. And about that time, she got... she read some stories about how people would be camped out on Jane Roberts' porch waiting to hear the words of wisdom from Seth, and she got scared, basically. We were trying to get publishers to publish the first book, and we were getting turned down because nobody wanted to touch a new Seth book for legal reasons and other reasons, let's face it. And so she said, well, I'm going to, now that I've given you this gift, we wrote the first book, that's what I promised Seth, and now I'm going to go back to the Maitreya, which she did. She dropped out, boink, and left me with the project, and Seth taught me how to fine-tune his communication stream, his transmission, and we wrote the next chapter in The Evolution of the Soul. It's a book that tells you how to do what I do, which is contact your energy personality, your spirit guide, or whatever you want to call it, and how to explore your personal reality. He calls it the personal reality field now. So, there were various trials and tribulations, as there are in anybody's life, I guess, but I had the good fortune to have this guide, Seth, and some other non-physical beings that he's introduced me to. And my wife and I had to move up here. We were sort of forced out of our living quarters in Sausalito. They sold the property for millions of dollars, and we couldn't afford millions of dollars to buy it, so we moved up to Lake County. And I continued writing with Seth, and we put together the information in Thought Reality. Thought Reality is a book that it contains two regimens. The first one is the healing regimen, in which you can learn how to heal yourself or another person using Seth's techniques. There's another one called the Spiritual Prosperity Program, in which he explains the spiritual basis of money, of all things. I know, it's astounding, but it's actually true. Money has a spiritual basis. And if you're experiencing lack, he shows you how to overcome your issues and experience a perception of the abundant universe, as he calls it. It's a lot of stuff to take in, so I'm sensing that Seth wants to come through. I'm going to hopefully cover the main points that I promised. We're going to discuss Seth's techniques for creating improved reality. He calls it positive reality creation. If you're experiencing a negative reality, I mean, if you're sick, if you're angry all the time, if you're experiencing a lack of necessities, you know, lack, with a capital L, as he calls it, there are ways you can heal those realities, create the positive reality of the negative reality. In a way, it's like the Buddhist aphorism of creating, making medicine out of poison. A lot of that in the new Seth material. Anyway, I sense him coming through. Should I just let him come through and then he can kind of lead the discussion? And if I want to come through, he just steps aside and vice versa. That seems to be a nice way to do these sort of things. Sure. First, we're going to have some of this. Wow, that is good. Anyway. Okay, what he's telling me right now is the same thing he always tells me in these presentations. You people are here, are keeping appointments, basically. That's why you have a sense of deja vu, correctly? And that we always meet to discuss these matters of what really is important. And this is going to be what we call as a mental overshadowing, meaning I will have some memory of it. When he does a full full physical overshadowing, I don't remember anything. Okay, he's saying that resistance creates cynicism, sort of, and it also breaks the circuit. There's a certain circuit that flows through people in a group like this, so that if you just flow into it in a sort of he uses the term courageous expectation, then you can feel his transmission coming out. Yes, Mark is quite correct, you see. You are always doing similar things in all of your realities. All of your simultaneous lives. You are always looking for the truth of the matter. Yeah, and I notice how as you ride this flow of energy rather than resist it. It takes you to a deeper, more pleasant state. There. Briefly, we speak of a vanguard. You are all members of this vanguard. We call them the magicians, shamans, witches, and healers. That is not to say, however, that you pursue your exploits in the New Age circuit. For the most part, you work undercover. Working as a a collaborator with the divine, you might say. So you could be a factory worker and still on what we call the subtle levels, you are helping people integrate, helping others learn their lessons as you're learning your lessons. Now, you may not identify with this group. There may be a resistance. You see, this is quite possibly because you have been punished severely by practicing out in the open. Let me give you an example. My associate Mark has met his maker, as you put it. on several occasions. He likes to go out that way. For practicing witchcraft at one point. Now this was in a female form. For Mark's benefit, I remind him that most of his lives are female. He's inhabited in a male form currently. I tell him this so that he can contact that feminine side, you might say. And so in this past life, as you call it, he was terminated. He made his transition abruptly. Or sins against the collective, you might say. And he remembers that now. And so he is learning how to practice out in the open. That is my suggestion to you, if you feel as though you're in danger by talking about these subjects, or you're doing something sinful or evil. There is a phenomenon we discuss in our new book that is a remembering of the ancient wisdom, as some of you call it. All of you are remembering the old ways. This is a worldwide phenomenon. And so, as Mark remembers that past life in which he was terminated for his views, it is with some trepidation. You could say that your humanity, your collective of humans, your Mother Earth are all calling out for this necessary transformation in consciousness that is occurring. You're in it, and it is occurring at a accelerated rate. Some of you are calling it the singularity. The shift. It is, in my terminology now, the consciousness unit, you're composed of consciousness units, knowing itself, reflecting upon itself, as all of the consciousness units that compose your physical reality reflect upon themselves and know themselves, you'll find yourself tuning in on these other lives of yours and remembering. That is what the shift is about, insofar as this teaching of mine is concerned. You will become aware of your many lives, as I said. Most of you in this room have lived lives of do-gooders for the most part. Most of you have been punished for that. You have that in common. And so when you have these bleachers in the moment, your current moment point, if you're familiar with that, I suggest you don't deny it or intellectualize it. Just accept it and go with that flow of consciousness that you're accessing. That's how he does it. And so now I'm back, and it's like it never happened. But I do have some memory. So, do you see that work? I think the important thing about the work I'm doing with Seth is that he's normalizing it for people. That's why I like to show people how easy it is and how harmless it is and how beneficial it is. Because what he's advocating is that everyone can do it. And the more of us that do it in our groups, the quicker that we can go and the more painless this transformation can be. And I'm just taking it for granted that everybody agrees that there's something going on. I mean, there's something going on, as far as I know. Okay. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
Are you going to discuss the 9/11 revelations?
Sure.
Appreciate that.
Okay. I'll just let Seth come through. He has some interesting stuff that he put out in a forecast. Late in the year, we do a forecast for the coming year and then put it on our website. And I just realized today that he was right on with a few things. Now, you created the events of 9/11 just as surely as you create your individual realities. It was a collective manifestation. Invariably, students will ask, who is the perpetrator? Now, usually we say, you are the perpetrator. You created it. However, most people want to know, did our government do this to us? Now, I will relate that to a prediction I made for 2009, in which I said that members of a shadow government will release a biological agent on your west coast in the early months of 2009. This is just playing out for you now. This shadow government has existed for decades. It is where the real power lies in your politics. And so when I say that you created 9/11 and those events, to clarify, there is a ruling elite on your planet that is controlled by what we are referring to as negative entities. Gestalts of consciousness that are fueled on the negative emotions of human beings. This has existed throughout time, as you know it. For the last several decades, your U.S. has been ruled by leaders who are driven by this negative entity. This negative entity has given birth to the, what you might call the negative gods and goddesses. whatever you think about as a reality, but as an energy. From energy, physical reality is made. And so you might think of this negative entity as a repository, is what we always say, of the negative emotions, thoughts, images of humanity. Now, recently you are beginning to break your bonds to this negative entity. You're doing it through the political process, as you call it. However, it is not enough. There is a cosmetic change in your current Western world. You think that you are being rescued by your political leaders. Underneath that is the reality of the situation in which you remain enslaved by your consumer addictions, first and foremost, but also by negative thought forms, negative entities. It sounds very far out to consider that you are, for the most part, not the thinker of your thoughts. Particularly in your United States, you think that you are independent captains of your ships of consciousness. However, there's a lot going on in your individual consciousness. We discuss in our new book how to identify those streams and to weed out those transmissions that are helping you create negative realities, replacing them with more loving transmissions. Weeding that garden. And so this transmission, this transmission from the negative entities is fading somewhat. There are what we call laws of non-interference that prevent me from naming names. We give you the basics in our books. However, we ask you to approach your studies as scientists, a scientist of consciousness, exploring your own reality. Since you create your own reality, you will have a particular and peculiar reality waiting for you to give you all the information you require. Now, if you accept this fact that you are composed of the same units of energy as the chair in front of you, and that all of these units are eternal, each unit is connected with the other holographically, if you could understand that. I'm attempting to put an image in your mind. Holographically means it is everywhere, all the time, past, present, and future, connected telepathically. So you are connected telepathically to the chair in front of you, to each molecule of air in front of you. If you can truly embody this, you would not require my prophecies. You would just ask yourself in times of reverie and your meditations the questions. Now these laws do not pertain to individuals, and so as you awaken to your own reality creation strategy, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. The true rulers of your earth do not exist in third dimensional reality. They exist in extra dimensionally, you know. So. Does that answer your question somewhat?
A vague way, yes.
Again, I'm prevented from elucidating. However, the answers are there within your own consciousness.
I have a question related to that subject. I was just wondering how Seth felt that humanity is doing in terms of what you said, what Seth said earlier about that it was kind of a wake-up call, and if we didn't follow the lessons or learn from the lessons, that it would bring destruction to humanity. So I just was wondering his perspective on how we're learning, how well we're learning the lessons.
Okay, I'll come in. He's just sort of dipping in that. You are learning your lessons. However, for the most part, you always learn your lessons by default. You mistakenly believe that you are experiencing your environment. You are your environment. What you are experiencing in front of you is a projection from your interior world. And so if you don't like what you see, change it. It's your responsibility to change it. So when I say that large numbers of you are waking up, that's what I mean. You're waking up to this realization. You are the creator. Now we are sitting within a holy place here. Many books on the spiritual practices of humanity. Ultimately, however, within this teaching of spirituality, as the human working in collaboration with the divine on a one-to-one basis, collaborators. This is the same working relationship I have with the divine. I'm no more divine or spiritually evolved than you are. However, the reason I'm writing books again is because we have to awaken more people. There is an evolutionary path. If you think of all that is as evolutionary consciousness, consciousness evolving. It is true that you would save yourself over time. However, there might not be many of you left at the end of that evolutionary trial. This is the Armageddon scenario that sits as a harbinger in the back of your consciousness, frightening you into changing your ways. However, why be frightened into change of any kind? This awakening I'm speaking of is an acknowledgement of your divinity. And it is a very pleasant enterprise to acknowledge your divinity. It is the highest expression of emotionality within your system. We talk about elementary ecstasy in the books. Why are people afraid of feeling good? That's my question. So rather than fear this potential destruction of everything. Why not turn it around into an acknowledgement of the loving creative energies of all that is, that creates you in the moment? That is what it feels like. Some of you are feeling it now. That is what it's like to turn fear into courage. That is what it feels like to turn cynicism and anger into what we're calling love, with a capital L, loving understanding. And you are coming along nicely. We speak to collectives such as this, the magicians, shamans, witches, and healers. We call you the vanguards also. We're trying to suck you into this. Not by complimenting you. We're asking you to remember something. To remember something that you already know, that you have learned, that you're always learning. For groups such as this, you're always learning the same thing. Over and over and over. In different bodies, certainly. In different eras. However, because you're what you might call my people, you always do it in a particular way. You always pretend that you don't know the meaning. That way, when you have your little awakenings, you can say, wow, I am on the path. However, this is your drama. You set up all of the paraphernalia before you came into the body of the baby. It just pleases you to surprise yourself with your newfound knowledge on how things really work. So I am preaching to the choir, in a sense. In other venues, some people are not as understanding. They are not aware that they are creating their own reality, and so they become angry, not realizing they are creating the anger. However, in these collectives, there is a group flow that is involved. People support one another, you might say. And if we're lucky, people will remember these truths and tell their friends about it. So you are making inroads. You as a race, as a human race, you'd like to save yourself. It is in all your mythologies. Right at the darkest hour, you come through and save yourself. You do it in your political systems, your social systems, in your individual lives. Very dramatic. And so right when it becomes right when it looks as though there is no hope, you are motivated to remember, to begin the quest again, to start your spiritual practice, etc., etc. So that is why I'm here. I'm here to give you some guidance. Okay, see. Then he just bowls out. Okay, did he answer that question? Yeah. He doesn't give you...
Without nailing it, really, but...
Well, he can't give you an explanation that interferes with your evolution.
Okay.
I'm not sure of the. I do know why. For the same reason, it's kind of a funny story. When I first gave a presentation as Seth, I talk about this in the second book too. I said to Seth before I went out, Seth, please don't give out any personal information about me, because, you know, he wants me to learn my own lessons, right, particular lessons, and so he's always prodding me, here's an opportunity for you to do this and to do that and learn your lessons. And he says, oh, no, Mark, I would never do that. Did you come to the reunion? You didn't come to the reunion. Well, the Seth reunion, we called it. You were there?
No, I don't think so.
Having a deja vu here. So what's the first thing he does? He starts talking about all my issues and my drinking problem that I'm trying to overcome, blah, 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 blah. And he spent the first 30 minutes talking about my lessons. So, in a similar way, he sees that it's up to you and your guides to take care of that stuff. And it happens. I mean, I get calls and emails from people saying, oh, now I get what you mean. Why go somewhere and ask somebody else something that I already know, that I can find out from my own guides? Or, you know, introduce yourself to your guides. They come through and give you the answers. That way it's more authentic, too. And as you do that over time, it becomes a habit, a ritual habit that perpetuates itself. You become friends with your guides. Anyway, that's my disclaimer or reason or excuse. Does anybody else have a question?
You just mentioned that there's a pride that arises in us when we understand new knowledge. What does Seth say to how that could be alleviated, or how can you drain the pride out of you?
Well, he's been talking about that recently. Okay, let's see what he says. Yes, you think that there is a it is an either-or situation for you, that you have to be humble. That this means overcoming your desire to be rich and famous, to be charismatic, to be sought after by other human beings. These are your own beliefs that create barriers here. There's nothing wrong with being prideful, particularly when you're, let's say, experiencing a healing moment in your own organism. You have created a cessation of symptoms through healing rituals of some kind. Let us say you have done your rituals of manifestation, and suddenly someone gives you a large sum of money out of nowhere. There is a state of consciousness in which you can feel ecstasy as well as humility within that precise moment. And you can extend that moment into the next moment, the next moment, and the next moment. This is self-realization. And so religious conditioning must be undone, I think, for you can. See and feel this awakening experience. It exists for you, really, in potentiality. As you learn your lessons and you realize there are no dichotomies, there are no paradoxes, all is one. So for you, as you learn your lessons, this could be an indicator for you. You'll know you have progressed, that you're right on the edge of this awakening experience, the full-blown awakened experience that you in that you will feel this ecstatic state, which includes what you might call religious charisma. Your aura bursts, and so you will be charismatic. Your personal power, as you call it, will increase exponentially. Now, it's true that this may only last for several moments. However, continue with your practices, and you extend those moments until you create a momentum of awakening, you might call it. These are difficult concepts to put into words. That is why I'm attempting to put images into your brain, and you're receiving them and acknowledging them. Do you see? There are no disparities. This awakening that you experience consumes all. You are becoming all that is. That's something to be proud of. Am I making sense? Okay. And then he dips out. I think it's important too, Church, when I'm showing people how he can dip in and dip out, that you can do this also, and that it, I'm always saying this in my presentation, that one of Seth's big predictions that he laid it on me about 6 years ago. He said, mark my word, in a few years, this type of thing, meaning communications with your higher selves, and going on that information that they give you, will be so commonplace that people will be doing it in the workplace, while you're having a cup of coffee, you take time out to get a memo from your higher consciousness, incorporate the data you've learned into the conversation, having multiple conversations. You're having a conversation, me and you, in the physical world. But up here in the etheric world, you're also having a conversation between your energy personality and their energy personality. Now, Seth says this goes on all the time, but we don't acknowledge it. It's kind of preposterous, isn't it, that goes on? But he says it's going to be acknowledged and become very common. And now I'm seeing that, you know, even on Oprah, they're talking about spirit guides. Everybody wants a spirit guide now. So I think we're all right on track with this awakening thing, this shift. And it's a good thing. Did I just answer somebody's question? I don't know. If it's somebody else has got a question, great. We got about a half hour to go.
You have the what?
I do. I got the watch. We just had it. You know when we were talking about time earlier?
Yeah.
Seth gave me a message. He said, Mark, there is no time. And he keeps telling me this when I get strung out on, whoa, what do I do now? Keep in the moment, is what he said. The moment will support you indefinitely. Okay, if we got another question, how about a question on healing or prosperity? Do you have one?
Yes, I just wondered what the philosophy is about the cause of disease and how to amplify the powers of being able to heal.
Okay. This is all in our new book. Now, let me say this first and foremost. Mark has a mission. I've put him on a mission to send out ebooks to those who have life-threatening illnesses all over the world. And he's doing this. Now, we expect no payment for these books. Indeed, we expect enough to keep this project going. Anything other than that should be given away. It's hard for Mark to accept that. However, your malady whatever it may be. I'm speaking in a general sense now. It's created out of ideas, thoughts, and beliefs, as is all aspects of your personal reality. For example, in our book we speak of a gestalt of consciousness called indigestion. You're having a meal and someone makes a negative comment that turns your stomach. It's just a comment. However, you have the potential for creating within your physical body a state of indigestion. Now, as the uncomfortable state manifests, what I'm suggesting is that you are receiving a communication stream from a gestalt of consciousness. You might call it indigestion. You have relinquished your reality creation authority to something else. This is the way it is for all of you, all of the time. You create your realities unconsciously. So you respond to unconscious messages, subliminal messages, the messages from gestalts of consciousness, negative entities. They respond unconsciously. This is a creator of most of your conditions, and that it creates a vulnerability that, let us say, begins with indigestion. But then, because you have relinquished control to your medical model, let us say, to the mass media, to your pharmaceutical industry, over time, this indigestion could well turn into something more serious. It always begins with a mental vulnerability. Now we are talking about the subconscious creator. Most of you in this room are creating consciously or conscious co-creators. You realize that you have at your side the divine, the spirit world, as it were. And so you have an inkling of the spirit-based cause of whatever your discomforts or illnesses might be. And so it's easy for you to, let us say, in a kind of meditation, to consider your physical body, particularly this area here, projected onto an interior screen of some sort, let's say, and to see the light energies that emanate from various parts of this image. We call it the emotional body, the auric representation of the emotional body. All of your illnesses, all of your difficulties are caused by negative emotion. However, in this projection on the interior, let us say you are a visual person, you might project a dramatization on the screen of, let us face it, a loved one, a caregiver from the past who abused you, traumatized you, perhaps unintentionally. However, perhaps intentionally, which planted this seed, this mental vulnerability within your consciousness that you developed. And so that every time you experience a negative emotion, you find that as corroboration for this initial emotional injury. The caregiver says that you are evil. or that you are not going to amount to anything. And so for the next several decades, you make it your responsibility to corroborate that, because they are the loved one. This is how illnesses of a life-threatening manner come about. Now, the way towards health, that was a book I wrote several years ago, is to acknowledge in your current moment the truth of the matter. Let us say you have diabetes. Now, I've suggested that often, particularly when this malady comes on later in life, it is an inability or a reluctance to go with the flow of manifestation, to taste the sweetness of life, to help others taste the sweetness of life. And so let's say, you notice that on the visual screen. How would you rectify that? You would do the opposite of what you are doing to create the malady. Often this involves transforming the negative emotions you're experiencing into their divine opposites. If you're feeling sorry for yourself, service would be a good mode of activity. If you're feeling victimized, personal empowerment strategies should be developed. If you are feeling that you are not engaged in tasting the sweetness of life, do the opposite. Live life. Show others how to live life exuberantly. It sounds preposterous, however. Unless you are satisfied with your medical model and wish to have these thoughts which congeal as diseased organs cut out of your body, I would suggest you go this route. We call it the miracle model as opposed to the medical model. It entails a dramatic transformation of your thought processes, of your cosmology. Does that answer your question somewhat?
Somewhat. And how may one help? I'm in a situation where I just unconsciously seem to help people who are ill. How does one develop this? Capabilities.
No. Your orientation is visual. You have a visual orientation. So when you are treating a client or loved one, you impart to them the visual representation of the healed state. Let us say that the loved one, the client, it's not visual, however, they are tactile. How would you represent the healed image to a person who is tactile? Hugging while keeping this mental construct energized. So you're transmitting through the physical apparatus the healing energies, directing them with your inner sense of sight. It's all about using your inner senses in this particular way. First and foremost, discovering your orientation. You are obviously visual. discovering the client's orientation can come from questioning, projecting them on the screen that I'm speaking of, looking for how they create their world. Okay. Does that help?
Yes, it does.
Now, in our books, we have techniques. They're essentially ancient wisdom techniques. Strategies you are probably already aware of. The one we are presenting as the most effective is what we are calling the consecutive positive assessment exercise. Now, this is something you can teach your children or your clerk. Simple, you teach them to find the divine, you might say, wherever they look. To find the good in every moment. And then when you invariably have a moment where you cannot find anything positive, to begin again in the next moment, looking for the positive aspect. It can be a fun game for you. This is an old technique. It's very simple to begin and quite difficult to continue. But having mastered it, you can create realities for yourself of a highly improved nature, including this spontaneous healing that we speak about in our books. This may help you. We conceptualize spontaneous healing as a gestalt of consciousness, a reservoir of the healing successes of magicians, shamans, witches, and healers across the millennia. Now, this includes future deposits. Every time a spontaneous remission occurs, you might say, this gestalt of consciousness is improved and fine-tuned. Now, how do you visit this gestalt of consciousness? In metaphorical vehicles of various types. You speak in your New Age literature of the astral form. That is one way to visit it. There are those of you who have the energy working techniques in which you direct the healing energies into your body first and then into the client. This is where the energy is coming from in this particular conceptualization, a gestalt of consciousness called spontaneous healing, remission, what have you. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes.
This is a very helpful technique. And then splits.
Wow. I can ask a question?
Yes.
When you were talking about the seeds and the healing, and I had a clear understanding all of a sudden of the ancient buildings that were built with stone so tight together that the only thing that toppled them was earthquakes. Of all of a sudden understanding, if the truth fits so tight together, no seed can get in here. It can't topple it.
That's true.
But if we have creeks that we have made in our truths that are holding us together, the seeds can get in there, but we have to be aware of it.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
So it is this stone that gets sown that nobody knows how it's cut.
Mm-hmm.
But we're the ones that do the stacking.
Yeah, I like that. That reminds me of Seth's whole thing about the... Did he talk about the ancient wisdom? See, I don't remember a lot of what he's saying. But he talks a lot about it in the thought reality, but he calls it the new science, this idea that, you do create your own reality.
Yeah.
that you can do distance healing, that anybody can do it. Anybody can heal themselves. But you do have to take care of yourself. You have to learn your lessons, as he calls it. This, I like the idea of ancient wisdom and remembering it, because it's... can I just let this come to me? And then I guess we're... It's 12 to 9. And I quit at 9? You tell me.
I would suggest wrapping it up forever. And then hanging out with people, so that if they have, you know,
okay.
things they want to talk with you about, then they can okay. approach you. With, is that agreeable?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, let me just say this. In our second session, we had when Cass was, she was laying out on my couch. She had her eyes closed. This is before she jumped up and was talking right in front of me. Nose to nose. I asked Seth, well, Seth, it's been a while since you wrote a book. And since, theoretically, time has passed, you know, decades have passed. And he says, yeah, theoretically. And I said, well, let me ask what I'm going to ask. Are you changed because you've had different experiences over the last few decades? And he says, yeah, Mark, I've changed. I'm a different Seth. And I said, well, are you Seth 1 or Seth 2? He used to talk about Seth 2 in his little books. He said, I'm Seth 3, Mark. And I said, really? And he said, no, don't get bogged down in that type of thing. I'm the same Seth that you read about. I am it. And then he said, oh, in the matter of time, there is no time. And that, for some reason, that made me start crying, because I realized, wow, I'm talking to Seth. It was like a magic moment for me. Anyway, shall I have another question, and then we can have Seth come through?
Is Seth a trap spirit? In the astral plane, and is not able to evolve higher, so he communicates to us through you?
No. I asked him once what he was. Somebody that's associated with the, what's that channeled information about the Bible and...
The Course in Miracles?
No.
Aquarian Gospel of Jesus?
No, the other one. I should remember that. It's in my book somewhere. Anyway, somebody said, well, you're one of the midways in this hierarchy of channeled sources. And he says, no, I'm not that. I'm not an extraterrestrial either. He said he's a source that has informed humanity since the beginning of time. And I'm always trying to pin him down on, well... Who are these humanities that you're informing? And I got it in my head that one time, well, Mark, me and Aristotle were colleagues. And so I got it in a dream. So I woke up and channeled Seth, and he says, yes, I've been informing philosophers, do-gooders. The outcome of this was that... he said that, well, if you look up in the history of Aldous Huxley, the day Aldous Huxley died, the next day, Jane Roberts contacted Seth on her Ouija board. And so I said, well, what's that about? He said, well, he was one of many on the party line, and Jane just picked up the phone, metaphorically speaking, the next day. And that these sort of meetings happen... They're setups. You set up a meeting in the time in between lives, the home dimension, as he calls it. So, no, I don't think he's a body trapped in whatever he's at.
Is it similar to the Michael channeling?
He's very similar, yeah. He says, he made a comment once that he liked Michael. He liked Kryon because of the gentleness of. The transmission, and I said, well, it's this Kryon entity, what is he like, or what is that entity like? And he said, well, we notice each other by these I guess he was talking about a holographic something that they wear around their necks, and that it identifies all of your existences that you've been in physical reality. And he says this one is composed of almost all positive, fulfilled lives, whereas most people, let's face it, you've got some skeletons in the closet, you know. He's told me that I've murdered and I've been murdered in my lives, and so for the most part, we learn about negativity in this dimension. But did I answer that question?
Yes.
Okay. How about a question that Seth answers, and then because I know you guys want to hear Seth. Does somebody have a statement? Maybe I'll just let him answer that question. Whatever that question was. Oh, here we go. Okay. There is a misunderstanding, a misperception of who I am and what I represent. I often remind you that you are experiencing a deja vu moment right now, because you are experiencing a deja vu moment right now. You make your reality out of probable realities. You're an artist in this regard, and so you are picking and choosing on the inner world on what you're going to exteriorize and then experience as feedback. So you are looking at me, but you are also looking at yourself. I am you. Now, when I say that you are a part of everything, everything is a part of you, I mean that literally. Every element within your physical body, these consciousness units, is connected to every other consciousness unit everywhere. The air here is composed of consciousness units, the same generic consciousness units that can become anything through your intention, subconscious or conscious. And so when I say, in our metaphor of when you walk across a room, many of you believe that, oh, I am walking across the room. I'm bringing my physical body across the room, and now I can go to the bathroom. In actuality, what is occurring is that you are creating out of the generic consciousness units in front of you your divine identity, step by step by step. So it is a remarkable thing when you walk across a room. That is why you find this a familiar exchange we are having here. We are always having the same conversation. Tonight when you go to sleep, you will have a conversation in the dream state. We are communicating in that way. At all points in space and time, we are communicating. I'm just here reminding you of that. I don't wish to blow your mind, but that is the truth of the matter. We are always in connection with one another. Do you see how that works? I think many of you see that. Most of you are visual, but some of you are tactile also. You need a hug or a handshake. And then the transmission will find its place. I thank you for coming. Remembering also that this is ongoing, this conversation we are. Okay, well, that's self. All right. Well, thanks a lot, folks.